This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Raise Your Game on Enterprise. Coming from a Western culture, George here, I'll say which George, often sees respect as accepting that people have opinions and how it's important to express them. It's rather straightforward, hence people can have lunch together even after a vigorous discussion as they have a common understanding that it's only business and it's nothing personal. However, as a leader of a multicultural team, he soon realizes that the Eastern form of respect is based on power distance. What does that really mean and how does one learn to be respectful in the workplace? Which culture would make the cut in today's time and age? It's George Aveling, Group CEO and international partner of TMI Consultancy, talks to us about this controversial topic of respect, the myth of respect in the workplace. Hi, George.
Hi, Frida. How are you? Good to see you again.
Good to see you again. George, like as if I didn't know, but tell us a bit about your background and, you know, how do you come about realizing this myth of respect in the workplace?
Okay, background is, as you
Aussie.
Know. Sorry?
Aussie.
Aussie, that's right. Aussie. Oi, oi, oi. I opened the office of TMI, it's a global consultancy, in 2005. And so I moved from Australia, Perth, Western Australia, and all of a sudden became a leader over a period of time of a number of people in a different culture. And so, therefore, I moved up a learning curve and understood different paradigms with regard to communication and what does respect mean.
Mm. Yeah. And even coming out here, when you say you come to a different culture and there's that whole Asian thing, then there's the Malaysian thing. And within the Malaysian thing, there are the different, you know, the racial groups within the Malaysian thing. Were there also differences within that?
Look, I probably didn't take it down to that level, but I noticed that there are differences generally, but within my organisation, you know, there was one issue that I needed to deal with or that I became aware of, and that was the way that we hold our conversations and the level of openness that we have with, they call me boss, you know, I say, call me George, okay, boss. Okay, that's fine.
Well, they've moved away from sir.
That's right. Well, sometimes people say sir, and I say, well, have I been knighted, but no one's told me about it.
Okay, now I want to talk a little bit about then when you talk about the Western culture of respect, right? Before, I guess, we move to the what we call the Eastern side or the Asian side of respect, what would then be the Western side of respect?
Okay, let's say George and Frida work together. We are colleagues. Mm. And let's say it's 11:30 in the morning, and Frida brings something to George, and I'm the boss, and I say, Frida, you know, look, I can't believe how can you come up with this? I just don't understand. And Frida says, George, it's clear what, you know, these points are very clear, and we have quite a bit of a, you know, robust discussion, and after we have our robust discussion, what we do is we say at 12:15, hey, it's lunchtime. Where are we going to lunch? And the Western style, the style that I'm accustomed to, is respect is I respect that Frida has an opinion and Frida respects that I have an opinion. And we both respect each other and expect that we will express our opinions. Mm. So in other words, we talk about the issue and we're both on the same side to get the issue resolved. Yeah, that's our form of respect.
Okay.
So,
and when we talk about then the Malaysian style and the whole concept of power distance, what usually happens?
We're at 11:30 in the morning, right? And what might happen is I have a chat with Frida, and Frida doesn't open up to me because Frida's paradigm of respect is I don't disagree with the boss. And certainly if there are other people there, but, you know, there's power distance. I just got to, you know, I won't express my opinion. You know, sometimes you get a case where people say, I'm just going to shut up. Hmm. So the Malaysian Eastern, I'm not quite sure which one, but style of respect is I will respect my boss by not being totally open because I don't want to disrespect them as people. Now we're moving away from the issue of talking about the issue to being concerned about people. Now, but I will continue the story. It then, when I, in my organization, what I found was I had to understand this, and it stressed me out. I remember going home really stressed because I just didn't understand this. And then what would happen after our discussion, where Frieda used the Eastern style of respect, she would then have a lunchtime conversation and talk about me and why these things, you know, why you can't
that
agree
George.
With me. That George, absolutely. Hey. You've been on that conversation, haven't you? You know all about it. And in fact, and I'm not saying the Western style is better,
right?
But I'm saying it's different. When you talk behind my back, that is the highest form of disrespect.
Mm,
so right. That's where the stress came on, and it became, well, how do I deal with this?
Is it because then we sometimes, and I'm putting it from an Asian hat, that we see that being disagreeable as disrespectful?
That is the DNA. Mm. You know, it comes from, you know, I'm not a sociologist, but it, you know, it's respect your elders. Mm. And I think it is this issue of power distance. You know, there is this concern that you don't want to, you know, upset the boss, but it's partly boss created as well.
Mm.
You know, and I've seen it in the workplace that bosses do not encourage people to talk. Mm. And don't necessarily, you know, and when people disagree, it's not accepted. So it, you know, it's partly cultural and it's partly reinforced in the workplace by the ways that the leaders behave. So this is more a leader thing to deal with than an employee thing.
Right. You know, I think I sit in that place where it's sort of in between, where in a room, I would still sort of shut up. But if I something that I feel it's important enough, it'll be a one-on-one conversation with the boss. So as you can hear my opinion, but I have given you the respect and the face, in a room.
Yeah. I think it, again, depends upon the boss. So, for example, I was talking to members of my team this morning. So face is not an issue. You know, in our organization, I was talking to one of our team members and he said, well, you come from a different background. You come from a Western background. And therefore, I encouraged people to disagree. We have a concept of constructive disagreement. Mm. And it is about it's okay to disagree, express your opinions. And now we've got a very open culture when it comes to discussions. Last year, we had someone join our team, one of our team members last year. And after a few weeks, he said to his wife, when they have a meeting in, you know, TMI consultancy, it's like World War III. And the reason is we are passionate people and we will discuss the issues knowing that no one is going to get upset.
Mm.
No one's face is hurt because we're focused on how do we deal with the issue.
Right.
Once you move away from having to deal with face, you deal with issue, you deal with issues in a much more straightforward manner. For example, you were thinking, okay, so therefore you're in a group of five people and you will have a meeting with the boss. Now, what happens if four other people were going to have a meeting with the boss? How efficient is that going to be?
True, right. And even, okay, when you talk about voicing your opinion, when you say constructive disagreement, does it mean that I always like it if you've got feedback, I appreciate your feedback, but can you also come with a solution?
Look, what we want is for people to sometimes there isn't a solution, you know, and I'm a great believer in the power of the question. And we might be in a discussion and someone might say, look, I'm not sure about that. Have we thought about this? Have we thought about that? And it's more about having a diversity of opinions. Now, we don't expect everyone to have an answer. It's a diversity of ways of looking at the same issue. Questions are extremely powerful. As a matter of fact, I know the best thinkers and the best contributors to our meetings are the ones that ask the deep questions. Mm. I don't expect people to say, this is what I think, this is what I think, and this is the answer.
Right.
But I expect people to give me shades of grey to things that I'm thinking about.
Right. I know at the end of the day, it would really be about how leaders can create an environment where employees feel free to speak. But before we get there as well, you know, we talk about these silences, and I know there are three types of silences that we got to look out for.
Well, it's something that I created, actually. Misses many years ago, when this was on my mind, and I was having discussions with my team members, and it started off, I have one-on-ones at the end of the year. They're now called values performance dialogues. They're not assessments, they're dialogues. And the aim is to make people aware of behaviors in the workplace. And I developed the three silences. One is, let's say Frida is my boss, or Frida's a colleague. And Frida says something, and it's sort of, oh, gee, you know, I'm not sure about that comment.
Mm.
But honest silence is when I say, that's okay. Frida said something and that's okay. It doesn't bother me.
Right.
Dishonest silence is the second silence. Frida said something. No, Frida, it's okay. But in fact, my insides start churning and it does bother me. And I tell other people, do you know what Frida said? And one day, I don't tell other people, sorry.
Yeah.
I just keep it inside. Yeah. And
explode one day.
And one day I explode. And the third silence is toxic silence, where Frida says something. No, it's okay, Frida. And I tell other people, can you believe what Frida said? So I'm creating people to take, wanting people to take sides.
And that's when tyranny happens. Right. We're going to talk a little bit about then how can leaders create an environment where employees feel free to speak and, you know, be honest and open about things in just a moment. I'm here with George Aveling from TMI Consultancy, listening to Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter, BFM 89.9.
This is Raise Your Game Enterprise. I'm Frida Liu, George Aveling from TMI Consultancy. If you've just joined us, we talk about the myth of respect in the workplace and how, I know you shared a little bit about the Western perspective, the Eastern perspective, and the power distance that, you know, Malaysia seems to be, you know, quite high up on that list. And even the silences, right? And you were talking about how there's the honest silence, where people generally take what you have to say, the dishonest silence where it bothers you but you're not speaking up, and then the toxic silence where you start, you know, your little gangs, all right? Now, I guess at the end of the day, with all this in mind, how can leaders create an environment where employees feel free to speak?
Yeah, you're right. This is a leader thing. It must be led by leaders. I'll share with you what I did. First of all, we've got a set of values, and we've had two versions of these, but in both cases, communication was the first value. The first version one was honest, kind, respectful communication. Honest, kind, respectful communication. So therefore, if there is an issue, it is about let's have this honest conversation. The current version is communicate to build relationships. So therefore, it's about people living a set of values. Our values are very much alive in our organisation. See, it's also about we have annual and we have check-ins during the year, what we call dialogues. It's one-to-one dialogues. So when they have a dialogue with me, the first thing on the dialogue, we give them a format, and it's a few pages that they think about and reflect on. The first section is all about how well they've lived the values. And they assess themselves. I don't assess them. It creates space for conversations. And so therefore, it's another opportunity to think, well, how well am I living these? And I will give feedback, but I won't assess. The other important part, a very important part, is the behavior of the leader. The leader has to be open to different ideas. Now, a way to not do it as a leader is if Frida says something and the boss says, George says, I don't agree with what you're saying. what we should be saying is, Frieda, there are a number of ways of looking at this. Have you thought about? And so we're creating this space for to influence you to think in a different way. Or that was a really interesting comment. Can you tell me more about it? I hadn't thought about that before. Because quite often leaders are busy pushing their agenda and their view. A leader is strengthened when he or she understands diversity of views. Diversity in the workplace strengthens the leader and strengthens the team. It really does.
So you talk about diversity in the workplace, and have you worked with people who don't believe that or say pay lip service to it, but they're not living it?
Look, it's all around us. It's first of all, what we need to have is a level of awareness. If you're a leader who is unaware of this, then you're swimming in your own pond. You don't know what water you're swimming in. Then there is another type of leader that wants to do it. And I think there are a smaller percentage of leaders. And it takes practice to get there, because our default is to go back and express their views. It is much easier to be a telling leader, but it is much more effective when you are unleashing the thoughts of the people on your team. It motivates your people when you create an open environment. I will say there was a study in the Harvard Business Review, and it was about engagement in the workplace. Now, if you imagine a long rectangular boardroom table, and what they did was they got people to have – there were these wearables, and the wearables could tell where the communication was flowing. I want you to imagine Frieda is sitting at the end of the table and she is the boss. Now, what they found was the low engagement workplaces were the ones where all the communication at the meeting was pointing to Frieda, no matter where you were sitting. The high engagement workplaces, where the discussion was going across the table and around the table. So the boss is not the focus. The boss is a facilitator of an ideas process. At the end of the day, decisions need to be made, but the thinking comes from a spirit and a culture of openness on the team.
And it starts with awareness, you were saying.
It starts with awareness.
With everything. And I'm sure you've had meetings with clients or potential clients, and, you know, have they been – some of them are not even aware that they need to be aware. How do you get that – how do you start with the journey? You ask a lot of questions, I guess.
From our point of view, what we do, it depends on the client. Sometimes we're not in a – if we're in a coaching situation, then we can give feedback. At other times, we're with an organization and we do what we have to do. At times, I would have a meeting or a lunch or a breakfast with a senior person on the team. It depends on the nature of the relationship and the nature of our engagement with a client. But I do see it's so common in the workplace that we have unaware leaders not realizing they could multiply their effectiveness if they created a culture of constructive disagreement.
Is it also psychologically that people feel threatened when they are being questioned? They feel they're being questioned.
Probably. And someone said to me many moons ago, and it had such a big impact on me, Frieda. He said to me, an ordinary manager thinks that he or she needs to have all the answers. A great leader understands that all he or she needs is to be able to ask the right questions. So we're moving away from the paradigm of the leader or the manager knowing all the answers to being able to ask the right questions. You will increase your effectiveness when you can ask deep questions. And when you do that, you're training your people to ask deep questions as well.
George Aveling from TMI Consultancy. You've been listening to Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.